Welcome to the lighter side of the dark side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers and YouTube and everybody listens to us. It's Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and I'm up. We're taping this earlier than expected, and I think she just woke up and she looks great. My co-host, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Good morning. Afternoon.
Good morning. Good morning, afternoon, and you know, since it is noon here on the West Coast, I have a glass of absinthe, and you know what happened last time, and it's, by the way, I'm in the Crystal Catacombs right now, but here we go. You know what happened last time I had this? I didn't see fairies. I fell out of my chair and started slurring my words. So this time, I'm only going to have a glass, because I want to see fairies, and I see one already. She's actually the author of a book series, I think four books now, and there's there's quite a few on the way. I think 9 or 10 that are ready to get printed. And she's a fascinating woman. She's done, you know, she grew up, she wanted to be Wonder Woman, and she's been that and more. Now she's Queen of the Dark Fairies, I believe. Danielle M. Orsino.
Hi guys, how you doing?
Now, are you a dark fairy or a light fairy?
Today I'm an oracle, actually. So I'm representing both sides. Yes. So I'm representing both sides. I'm a neutral fae. So I figured I'd bring a little bit of both, dark and light, for you today.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. I didn't know the oracles were dark and light. And this is a switch from last week. Last week, Nicole was in the studio with three stand-up comedians. Now I'm on Zoom with two authors. So this is going to be, I'm outnumbered. But before we get started, I did want to mention our sponsor really quick. I had one of these this morning. I got up at 6 o'clock this morning, Nicole.
Oh, wow. And
I had a Raise energy drink because I was tired because it was 6 o'clock in the morning. And this perked me right up. I went to the gym. I worked out. And I got all everything I had to get done by 9 o'clock in the morning. This is a rarity for me. And this is all because of my favorite energy drink, and I've tried them all, Raise energy drinks. And this is the best tasting. This is the voodoo flavor, which Nicole liked. It tastes like fruit punch. And the best part, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash. It's got electrolytes and amino acids. And if you go to the description, if you're listening on any podcast catcher or on YouTube, use our code to get 15% off a case of Raise energy drinks, and trust me, you won't be sorry. Although I usually drink Raise during the show, I'm gonna sip some absinthe right now. And Danielle, as I said, you grew up, you were a big comic book fan, and you wanted to be Wonder Woman.
Yes, and I still do. Every day in my life, I try to be Wonder Woman, but I'm probably a little closer to Harley Quinn.
Oh. Oh, you have a little bad side to you.
Oh, I definitely have a little bad
naughty side.
Yeah. When I cosplay, I cosplay as Wonder Woman, but I do a much better Harley Quinn. I've cosplayed as Harley Quinn, done some photo shoots as Harley, so I'm definitely a little more Harley.
I've seen the pictures, and I'm not. You know, we have a lot of cosplayers on here, and I'm not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have my own. Like, I wear makeup on stage and things like that, and you know, I have crazy outfits I wear, but I don't really cosplay like some people really get into it. Nicole, you ever get into cosplay?
I was a Princess Leia for Halloween once, and that was like, I went around for like 2 weeks dressed as Slave Leia and got a lot of compliments, and that's the closest I've come to cosplaying. I even wore it to a convention, so yeah.
Nice.
So awesome. So you kept the Halloween costume going for another 2 weeks?
Yeah, I felt really proud of my body in this outfit. Like, I had worked out really hard to get to that point. So I was just showing off.
Oh, there you go. Was it nice. The slave outfit from Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, it was the official Disney one.
Mm. Well, nice. I have seen pictures of Danielle as Harley Quinn, and you do make a fine Harley Quinn. Now, I'm assuming you grew up in New York. Is that correct, or am I off base?
Nope, you're right. I grew up in Carmel, New York, which is like a really like a small little speck of a town about 55 minutes outside of Manhattan North.
Okay, I've never heard of it. I was born in
Not many people have. So not many people have, trust me.
How tiny a town was it? How many people were there?
Oh, it was small. My graduating class was like 144 people, I think. I mean, we were Carmel High School's very small. Not many things have come out of Carmel. You know, it's just a small little town. I think now it's definitely gotten a little bit bigger, but there wasn't much going on in Carmel at all.
Okay. Because this leads me to where I think you and Nicole may have something in common, because I think you have a lot in common, but I know Nicole's told us, and she started writing just to entertain herself, to have characters, things to do. You would sit under a tree and write, right, Nicole?
Yep.
Did you do the same?
I read comic books. I mean, that's kind of what I did. I ran a little comic book store, the only one around in Carmel. So right. I kind of got into comic books. That was part of it. Like I said, there wasn't much to do. I wasn't a big writer growing up. I just read comic books. I pretended in my head I was Wonder Woman. I was cosplaying when cosplaying wasn't a thing. You know, I was trying to find ways to create the costumes and do things like that. And I was, you know, listening to the voices in my head during that time, trying to make friends, because it was just such a small town and we were so incredibly bored. So you kind of, you know, there was nothing around. I mean, you couldn't even couch it. It was that tiny and it was that small. Wow. When the Danbury Mall in Danbury, Connecticut, like was under construction, that was, everybody was abuzz with that, because it was like, oh great, it'll give us something to do, yay. There just was nothing to do. I think Dungeons and Dragons, I tried to get into, there was nobody to play with, so I couldn't really do that. I bought some of the manuals and read them, because I was like, maybe one day I'll find a friend that I could play this with, that would be great. And then went back to my comic books, because once again, nothing to do. So you know, you went to Fawnstock, where you laid out on the beach and talked about one day getting out of Carmel. Which I did with my friend Jen, who became the inspiration for the character Lady Serena in my book, The Mermaid. And those conversations I actually took and put in the book. So my time in Carmel, while I wasn't writing when I was a kid, became the source material for a lot of stuff in the Birth of the Fae series.
Okay, so cool. I'm sorry, Nicole, go ahead.
Well, I said that's very cool. I like how you can take things from your own life and transition them into art.
Thank you. That was pretty much everything in the Birth of the Fae series in the book. All the people, all the characters are somebody I know. It was like I just took what I knew and wrote about it and just added a tail, you know, horns. It's all the fantasy characters are people I know.
Right. I've taken pictures of Nicole and drawn tails and horns on her, but that's neither here nor there. But no, but that's the thing. When you grew up, and I'm not going to ask you your age. I have a somewhat of an idea, and it's a kind of. I think we're probably around the same age, but there was no nerds. Nerd culture was not the predominant culture.
No, it's cool to be a nerd. Then it was not cool to be a nerd. It's like now it's nerd chic and geek chic. Then no. I mean, when I was running, I ran Moondogs. This is how far back it goes. When Moondogs was the comic book chain to go to, no, it was like, everybody was walking by, like flipping us off and they'd open up the door and literally like yell things in when people were shopping for their comic books. Ugh. It was not cool. It wasn't like it wasn't Comic-Con now. Now it's cool to be at Comic-Con. Right. Then yeah. No, it wasn't like you had to sit there hitting the refresh button hoping you'd get in. You could walk into Comic-Con and it was like, okay, whatever.
Comic book people just signing their comic books.
Yeah, it wasn't, I hate to say it, but it was like the window lickers. It wasn't
Tom Cruise and all these people coming in. It's like a bunch of comic book people signing comic books.
No, I mean, I remember when Wizard would come out, we were all like, oh my gosh. And you'd get like, they would have the October issue, the Halloween issue of like the cosplayers. And then it was just like their comic book, you know, costume contest. And that was like the big deal. But now it's, you know, back then you could, when you found your nerdkin, that was like, okay, there's a couple people like me out there, and you kind of held on to them.
Right.
Now it's a whole subculture, and it's wonderful. Don't get me wrong. I think it's phenomenal. But no, Tom Cruise was not walking in, you know, Henry Cavill, Ben Affleck was not dying to play Batman. None of that was happening right then. When Spawn came out, that was like, especially for the martial art community, that was like a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, oh my gosh, Spawn is getting me. John Leguizamo. Wow. These are huge things that are happening, and just getting the little buzz from Wizard Magazine on what movie might get made.
Right.
I mean, there was always like that talk of X-Men. I mean, I remember hearing about X-Men when I was living in Westchester County, and they were scouting, and there was talk of Van Damme playing Gambit, and everybody was like, you know, Gina Davis, maybe she'll play Rogue. I mean, that was like, maybe we'll get this. Holy cow, wouldn't that be awesome? When The Crow came out, this was huge. Right. Now it's like every day. I mean, it's you know, you open up your iPhone and you go through like the news feed, and it's, you know, comic movies are just accepted, and it's great. Well, it's, but then
they pushed every other movie out.
Yeah. Now it's just like Variety has its own like comic book movie section. Back then, yeah. No.
Well, I have a question.
Yeah.
So how, I know that when I decided to be a writer, I was writing for a small online community of about 400 people. This is back when I was in college. How did the internet change your ability to connect to people when it made the world smaller so you could get to other nerds?
I don't want to say closeted, but closeted in some, like everybody knew I was a nerd because I was a nurse. So I didn't really reach out much at first. I still went to the cons, and that's how I met people, but I was still kind of somewhat closeted in a lot of respects. But I started reaching out more on social media. Like I only got Instagram a year and a half ago. Wow. I don't even have a Facebook page. I stayed off of a lot of things because I was still scared of being accepted. You know, I think still there's that stigma of reaching out and being accepted into the community just in general. So I still just met people through the cons, and I'm grateful because I've met amazing people. So I would just reach out more through email and that kind of stuff. But I've only been on Instagram. It'll be 2 years, I think, in February. Yeah, 2 years that I've even been on Instagram.
I'm gonna help answer your question, Nicole, because when you say you were a closet nerd, and you know, you came a long way from people opening the door to the comic book store and saying, "Hey, nerd," you became a martial arts champion. That's not nerdy. That wasn't as mainstream when you were doing it in the 90s.
Right. It wasn't. I was still, and I was actually judged by Michael Jai. Right after Spawn, he just walked into a martial art tournament out of the blue. It was a charity tournament, and he walked in and judged me at the first time I won Grand Champion. He just like walked in and he was like, "You guys don't mind if I judge, right?" And sat down at the main judge's seat.
Sure, Spawn. And I was
I'm like, and I just looked around, and it was funny because it was my instructor used to make me go alone to tournaments, and he would only show up once a year just to see how I was doing. And that tournament happened to be the one he showed up to. And he looked at me and he was like, "Okay, now it's serious. Spawn's here." He's like, he's like, "Okay, like now we got to talk." And I'm like, "Oh, now we got to talk. Like now's your moment." And he's like, "We got to talk," because everybody I was competing against was from the same school. And I was the only one that was not represented from this school. And I'm like, "Okay." And he just walked up and he was like, "Yeah, I'm going to take this ring over." He's like, "You guys don't mind." And I was just sitting there and all I was thinking was, it Spawn. Like, mm-hmm. I got to compete in front of Spawn. This is so serious. And he did a backflip gainer and his foot hit the bottom of the basketball net and he just landed and everybody was dead silent. And I was looking at everybody else like, "Okay, just breathe. Just breathe. Like, we'll get through this." And my instructor just sat down. He went, "Okay, kiddo, go get him." And I'm like, that's your pep talk? He's like, yeah, that's all I got. He's like, I got nothing else. Like, go for it, kid. That's the moment. High five. Go get him.
And I'm that's still actually better than half the dialogue in this movie Spawn. I could have used a rewrite.
Well, I probably could help.
I'm sure you could. Michael J. White, though, of all the Hollywood actors, from what I understand, they always say who's a legitimate martial artist, and he's always at the top of the list. Like Van Damme, you know, people are like, yeah, sort of, but he's always
he's legit. Like he did some moves and stuff like right there,
right.
And I'm like, okay, and he was legit. I won Grand Champion, which shocked the hell out of me, to be honest. But I won, and he came up to me afterwards and congratulated me and talked to me. And I remember the one thing my instructor had always taught me was, you know, ask what you could have done better. I'm like, even if I win, he's like, even if you win. And I asked him, and he was so taken back, and he's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, what could I? And he's like, okay, well, since you asked, and he actually spoke to me for a couple minutes about how I could improve my form, what I could do, and then like sent me on my way. But when I was doing forms, when I was competing, it wasn't cool to compete in martial arts. That was still a nerdy aspect.
Especially for women.
Oh yeah, there were many times I had to be bumped to the men's division because there were no women, especially when you got higher in rank. And that included fightings, forms, all of it. It was like, okay, do you want to just take the trophy? And I'm like, no, I'll go to the men's division. And I get laughed at. Sometimes the guys were cool. Sometimes they were not nice to me at all. And you just had to deal with it. And, you know, but it was like, I was kind of always the outcast, always the nerd in some capacity or another. So you just
you were the nerdy martial artist.
Yes. And my instructor was very big on, you do not wear makeup. I don't want anybody to say you're getting where you are because you're a girl, because your looks, I don't care. So I would go in, no makeup, no nothing. The minute I was done, I'd go in the bathroom, change, put makeup on and leave. And I'd have people stop me and go, did you see your sister? She was so good. And I would look at them, and finally I started going, yeah, she was really good. Wasn't she amazing? I'm just taking her stuff out to the car. I'll be back. I'm going to grab her. And nobody knew I went like 2 years like that. And then somebody figured it out and they started calling me the assassin, because I'd walk in looking one way and leave another way. But for 2 years, I got away with people thinking I had a sister who competed. And then I was the other, you know, when they would see me dressed up, I was like, oh yeah, no, I'm just grabbing her stuff. I'm just taking it out to the car. I got her trophy. And no, yeah, she's changing. And I'd walk out and I wouldn't talk to anybody.
So you were even cosplaying as a martial artist?
Yes, I did. And I even tested that way. I would wear my Wonder Girl outfit that I made underneath my uniform, and I would test that way. And that would give me like my little extra strength.
Go ahead, Nicole.
So, I was going to say, let me know what you think of this. I technically have you beat in nerdy competition with what there are definitely no girls in this except me. I'm the best girl at this in Colorado. I used to play the actual Yu-Gi-Oh card game and go to actual Yu-Gi-Oh tournaments.
Yep, you got me beat. You got me beat on that.
Did you like Yu-Gi-Oh or Magic, or was that too nerdy for you? I understand how.
No, I actually liked Magic. I did like it, but there was nobody for me to play with. So I would sell the packs at Moondogs, but there was never like much going on. I remember we tried to do some tournaments, but we could never get anybody. We'd have people that would sign up and then not show up. We had a lot of that. But I never really got into it. I appreciated it, but I never like played with it and really got into it. But I'd love it. And since I've moved to Charlotte, there's a comic book store down the street that has like Dungeons and Dragons tournaments and things like that. And I've thought about going in and trying to learn, but I haven't taken that step. But you've definitely got me beat on that. And I appreciate that. And I can respect that tremendously for you doing stuff like that. That's awesome.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Was like our Sailor Moon for my time period. You know, like it was something all we could for doing.
Yes. I remember watching the cartoons and stuff and thinking that was cool. Like I wanted to try things like that, but I never took that step. I was still kind of always scared of.
I wasn't
jumping into it.
You have to be able to afford those cards in order to play those games.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It was a cost factor too. I was spending enough on comic books.
And I was going to say, I used to get beat up because I like Doctor Who, but that son, I don't feel so bad now. You guys got me beat.
Yes.
But what were the comic books that you liked? You were so into comic books.
I was, at the time, I was big into X-Men. I was doing a lot of Wonder Woman, and especially with the Crisis Zero Hour. I was collecting all those, and Brian Bolan was drawing most of the Wonder Woman covers at the time. So I was collecting tons of those because I liked him. I was doing a lot of Lady Death. I had some Spawn. Angela had just come out with her series. So I was grabbing and eating those up. I still have the first appearance of Angela. I have the first appearance of Lady Death and Lady Death's first, when she went off on her own. I have that. So I was doing a lot of Dark Horse stuff. Mm-hmm. Gen 13.
Right.
I saw the first Gen 13. When that whole Image thing jumped, I kind of followed those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I did fall for the whole Alpha Omega X-Men thing. I did fall for that, unfortunately. Okay. Yeah, uh-oh. I jumped on that. Yeah. You know, I thought like, oh, this will be so cool. Yeah, I jumped on that. But I'm still to this day, I'm a big Wonder Woman. The Elektra series, especially when Mike Diodato Jr. started drawing that, because I liked his work on Wonder Woman. So I followed him over to Elektra and did that. And then I got into all the cards that Marvel put out, which, you know, I thought some of the artists who jumped in were really, really good. So I had done that. And then I got into collecting some statues. I have a bunch of those. A lot of them were Wonder Woman. But I did collect some of the Marvel statues because I thought they were really nicely done. So I was spending money in the comic book stores. Probably way too much money. But yeah.
Well, but have you ever thought, since now it's your novels, have you ever thought about putting out comic books or anything like
that? That's totally my dream, is to do a graphic novel of Birth of the Fae. I've been approached, you know, and there's some talk, but I would definitely like to hit a graphic novel with it. You know, an anime is, that's the pinnacle for me, is to move to an anime, because I do really enjoy them. And I think it's a medium that has picked up steam, but it's still underappreciated in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to do an anime. That's really what I'd like to hit. But
in mind?
I do love, I did love, you know, I love Castlevania. I did like the way they had done it, something a little darker. I liked Son of Zeus, Blood of Zeus. Mm-hmm. I liked how that was done. I know this is probably going to sound bad. I didn't love the animation style, and I know they were the same studios, but I didn't love He-Man Masters of the Universe Revelation.
Nobody liked that.
Okay. Okay. Thank God.
Trust me. Nerds jumped all over that and gave them so much shit.
I get like, what was He-Man, trying
it's
to be
not
done.
That big a deal.
You know what? He-Man was close to my heart, but I didn't like the way it went. But the
now,
animation
if you do the Birth of the Fae anime, are they going to have the big eyes?
No, I want to go. Like I said, I'd like to go a little more Castlevania-ish.
Okay.
I want to go a little more Americanized, if that's the right way to put it. But a little darker, because I'm very violent.
No, I understand. As we discussed. Speaking of your violence, let me go back, because as I said, you were a martial artist before Ronda Rousey, and there's so many female martial artists now. It's great, but you were a pioneer. You're in the World Martial Arts Hall of Fame, and you performed martial arts for President Clinton, who was president at the time.
Yes. That's incredible.
He didn't get handsy with you, did he?
No. He was actually, he had just gotten out of office, and it was kind of funny the way it happened. I was working in Chappaqua. I was doing a martial arts demo at my job at the time. And he happened to be jogging, and I was getting ready to go on. He tapped me on the shoulder. And here I am, like, in my full gear, ready to go. And somebody, in my eyes, somebody's bothering me, like, before I'm ready to perform. So I turn around and I'm like, what the F? And there's Clinton. And he's like, excuse me. And I'm like, and there's Secret Service with them, like, because he's doing his jog around Chappaqua. And I'm like, can I help you? He's like, what are you doing? You're dressed, and he knew it. He's like in a Chinese uniform, and he's like, what are you doing? And it takes you back because he's one, he's very not like I expected, I don't know, maybe an attitude, some swagger, something. And he was right. So soft spoken. And I'm like, I'm going to do a martial art demo. He's like, oh, I love martial arts. And I'm like, okay. He's like, can I watch? And I'm like, you want to watch me do Kung Fu? Like, it was very much like, huh? And he's like, yes, I'd love to watch you.
And I'm honestly, like, that doesn't surprise me.
And I'm looking at him. I'm like, okay. He's like, where would you like me to stand? Like, he was so, meanwhile, like Secret Service is saying stuff to him and he's kind of like, back off. And I'm like, you could stand here if you, this is where I get on and off. And he's like, okay, this is good. I'd like to stand here. I'm like, sure. He's like, how long is it? I'm like, I don't know. It's about 10 minutes. He's like, what are you going to do? And he's talking to me and I'm looking at him like, okay, this isn't computing. Okay. And he's like, my name's Bill. And I'm like, I kind of, okay, I'm Danielle. I don't know what to do in this situation. Do I shake your hand? He shakes my hands. And then people start walking around and, you know, trying to rush him, and Secret Service kind of backs him off. And he's like, I'm going to stand here. I do my whole demo. He comes over. He's like, that was phenomenal. He's talking to me. He's like, what do you do here? I'm like, oh, it's a personal training facility. He's like, I'd love to train with you. I want to do martial arts. And we just start talking. And I'm like, this is kind of surreal.
Right. Now,
what I know is that we did the whole thing. He asked me questions and he's like, I want to train with you. And I'm like, okay. But somebody didn't pass the background check in our facility. So he was a no-go. But he came back. He, you know, he wanted to see more and sure. But, you know, after that, I wasn't there anymore and whatever happened. But no, he watched the whole demo. We performed. He came over to me, talked to me how much he loved it. He was into the whole martial art thing. It's wow. Just weird because, like, if you told me, oh, you're going to perform, like, I would make sure everything's on. You know, this is just like, hey, and you're like, okay, what's up? And he's like, I'm Bill. And, you know, you're kind of standing there like, I know who, okay, I guess I shake your hand. I don't know. Do I bow? Would it, you know, it's just this weird kind of surreal thing, but it was really very cool.
Yeah, it was better that way because if you had to prepare like a couple weeks to perform,
oh, I would have messed that up.
Y'all, you know, weirded out. Self-conscious.
Oh, totally. Totally would have. But yeah, it was great.
Well, I thought you went to the White House or something, but this is an even better story.
No, it was totally impromptu. It was just, and I said, I was like, does this count as performing for the president? He's like, oh yeah. I'm like, all right, cool. It's going on the resume, dude.
Yeah.
The question is totally cooler. But when you said he was just like, my name is Bill, it reminded me of when I met Gerard Butler. He goes, hi, I'm Jerry. And I'm just like, okay. Like when they say something like that, it's so, you're like, we know who you are, but if that's,
it was so down to earth and so cool. And you know, and you like, you wind up giggling and I'm just like, I look like an idiot, but I'm like, cool. All right, let's go with it, dude.
Okay, Bill.
I didn't know Bill was a martial artist. That's
he liked it. Like he said he was into it. And I'm like, okay. I don't know if he was making small talk, but he was a really nice guy. So I'm like, all right, let's rock this out.
Yeah. It's a great experience. Honestly, I mean, I saw Bill Clinton at a rally in Nevada, and I, you know, I got pretty close to him. I didn't shake his hand, but I was, you know, I was probably like 3 feet from him. And, you know, regardless of political, you know, and I really don't want to talk about any politics ever, but regardless of that, when you're in the presence of a president, somebody that you've seen on TV, you know, there's something special. It's the only president I've ever been around or been close to, and you performed for a president. So, you know,
I was like, check that box. You know, it was pretty cool. I was like, this is, yeah, I was at that point, political alliances, but I was just like, this is cool. He was very nice. He's very down to earth.
It's cool. It's really cool.
And he was a lot taller than I thought. So it was cool. You know, my thought was, I look like I'm in silk pajamas. Like, this is not how you want to meet the president, but I'm like, I'm doing what I love. He's being really cool. Like I said, it was
well. He's
good
doing
experience.
What he loves and making small talk with women. But I did see a picture of you with a sword. Now you got pretty deft at swordplay.
I did work with a sword that was I did the Jin, which is the Tai Chi sword.
Okay.
The long sword. I've worked with the katana. I've worked with the Chinese broadsword. So I've done a couple bladed weapons. I am not good with the nunchucks. I am not good with the bow. I do much better work with bladed weapons. So I've done forms with all of those types of swords. And it does help me when I'm writing. I've definitely, you will not see me writing like nunchuck scenes or anything like that. I'm not good with that at all. All right. I can do is pass it through my legs. That's about it. Anything else, I will knock myself out. But I do bladed weapons, and that I will write sword, you know, kind of sword fight scenes and things like that. And that's pretty cool. But
we're gonna get to your novels in a little bit, because you know, they're not airy fairy, skipping in the fields stories. These are violent stories.
Yes, they are. They're grown up fae.
Yes, and your martial arts expertise and your weapons expertise makes the depictions of battle. You know better than most.
I try to bring some more realism to it than, you know, just a sweeping battle scene, because I feel like, you know, J.R. Tolkien, they do that really well. And it's lovely to see these big battle scenes. My fight scenes are more one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I'm more accustomed to in martial arts.
Yes.
So I try to bring that realism, so it kind of feels like you're right there looking over somebody's shoulder, versus some of the fight scenes we've seen in movies where it's a cape and a fist hitting, and that's all you see. It's just a blur.
Right.
I try to pull it back so you can actually see the two bodies going at it. Mm-hmm. And then what I do is I videotape the fight scenes. So I act them out first, and I videotape it with my phone and try to say, okay, how is this really going to work? How's the body going to move? Is this realistic? And then I write it from there.
Well, that helps with the monotony of sitting at a computer trying to think things up.
Yeah, just start doing it.
Get up and reenact what I'm doing and videotape it, and then put it down. Because I just have this
definitely
weird...
help.
Right, Nicole, you're just sitting at the typewriter, like you start glazing over after a while.
I have a slightly different process. I do like when I get an idea for a story, over the course of like a month, maybe 2 months, I'll start visualizing it in my head. So I'm walking around kind of like a dazed idiot, not really staring at a computer, but just like walking around like half here, half in my head. And then I just start playing out the scenario. Like right now I'm working on a zombie story, and I got this idea that there would just be like a thump, 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 thump on the other side of the door, one of the doors in the apartment complex, which lets you know there's a zombie in there. So they'd never open that door. Just little details like that start going through my head.
That's cool.
And eventually I have a whole complex movie in my head.
Right.
Yes, that's cool. I've done every author's process is totally different, and I am not a classically trained author. So let me start with that, and let me give that little disclaimer before I go any further. I'm a nurse, and I fell into this because of a patient. I did not set out to be a writer.
This is the most amazing part of the story. I love this part of the story.
I did not set out. Yes, I was working in a Lyme disease clinic. So I happened to have a patient, and I was very close with this patient. We started the same day. Our journeys were just, we were parallel. I mean, we were on that same track. And he was pretty much like, I don't want to do this anymore. He had been driving. First of all, he had uprooted his life from Pennsylvania to Westchester County to undergo treatment. And he had been undergoing treatment for over a year at this point. And then he finally said, look, I got to get back home. I can't do this anymore. So he'd struck a deal with the doctor where he said, okay, I will drive 5 hours on a Wednesday, drip for two, and then turn around and go home. On Fridays, I will drive up and drip Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday morning, and then go home and do this again. I knew it wasn't going to last, but Yeah, that sounds good. Doctor agreed to it. After about 3 weeks, he was like, Danny, I don't want to do this anymore. Bad idea. And I was like, look, if you don't, you're going to backslide, whatever, whatever. He's like, then find a way to keep me in this chair. Entertain me. I don't care. Do whatever. And so I finally said, well, you know, tell me something about your life. You know, just tell me anything. And so he said, well, I was recruited by the CIA right out of college. And I'm like, you should have taken the job. We could have found out what was in Roswell, you know, went through all the conspiracy stories. And he said, no, it was for the Trends and Intentions Division, the most boring part of the CIA. So as we were talking, I said, well, you know, I know why you're really here. And we made up some jokes. And I said, well, Lyme, you know where Lyme comes from. And he says, Plum Island, once again, conspiracy theory back and forth. And out of my mouth and to this day, I still don't know what made me say it. I said, no, Lyme disease really comes from the Fae. Don't know why I said it. I wasn't reading any fairy books. And he was like, well, who are the Fae? And then I'm like, oh, you don't know who they are? And I start talking to him about angels that were locked out of heaven that didn't get involved in the war between God and Lucifer. And I just start telling him this story and I'm making it up off the top of my head. And then I'm like, well, you're a CIA agent. You're really here to find out if that nurse is a Fae human hybrid. And I'm making things up. And he's like, tell me more. So every day I would tell him, when he would come in, I would just tell him another part. And I just kept making stuff up. So if something happened in the IV room, I would just work it into the story. And then like the doctor happened to have a big black Labrador. So the dog became a dragon and I was just making stuff up. And that's how Birth of the Fae came to be. It was just a story I was making up off the top of my head and just saying stuff, like hoping I just have to keep him entertained. So I put my patient in the story as the CIA agent that was there, right, to find out about the nurse, you know. And then he was like, you need to go home and write this down. He's like, this story, you need. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, sure, one day. I'm like, I'm going to be a physician assistant. I'm going to be a nurse practitioner. I'm applying to school right now. Like, I ain't got time for this. I'm not going to be a writer. I got med school on it. Like, I'm paying student loans. Like, I'm going to make some money here, dude. Like, all I was thinking was, I'm going to learn how to do Botox. And I got money. Like, I don't have time to be a writer. And then I had a needle stick accident. And they decided, okay, well, we're going to give you the same drug they were giving everybody else. I went into anaphylactic shock and almost died. Oh, and wow. I was like, oh, those hives I've been having when I'm giving everybody their meds, it's not because latex or this or that. It's because I'm allergic to the exact drug I'm helping everybody with. And my career in healthcare was over right then and there. And all the schools I had applied to, the ones I had gotten in, were like, no, you're allergic to the entire class of cephalosporins. We can't let you in. Wow. I had gone home, started writing the book. It was supposed to be one book, turned into all of this. And my patient was like, you're going to go write the book now? You're going to start getting it out there? He's like, the universe is telling you something. And he became my biggest cheerleader. And Birth of the Fae was born.
Well, the universe brought you to him. And
it did.
It may have been a Fae. Who knows? But let me tell you something. Those drugs were horrible. But let me tell you about some drugs that are good. Because Nicole's going to tell you about our other sponsor, which is Renegade Kush and Renegade CBD. Are you allergic to marijuana or CBD or anything like that?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't know. I've never tried it.
All right. Well, I'm not telling you to start, but if people enjoy that type of stuff, Nicole will tell you all about it.
So I enjoy CBD. I have a business meeting at 2 p.m. today, and I'm going to Gracias Madre. And one of the reasons I like Gracias Madre is they have CBD margaritas, two of my things combined together. We also have our own sponsor who gives us CBD. We're still waiting on our recent shipment, but he gave me the most delicious CBD gummies. They are delicious. Like, I'm all out. I tried to make them last as long as I could, but that was very difficult because they taste so good because a real confectionist makes them in a lab. So if you don't know what a confectionist is, that's someone that actually makes candy professionally.
They Plus also, when you eat one, you get the munchies, so you want to eat them all.
It's very difficult not to eat them all. So I also have been promised some white chocolate. I'm still waiting for that, and I'll give you guys my review when I receive it. But in the meantime, if you want to order some CBD products, we have CBD Kush and CBD. And so you go to renegadekush.com or renegadecbd.com.
Yes. And, it'll relax you. Get some bath bombs.
I still got a lot of the Kush left because I couldn't smoke it. He gave me a lot of Kush. So that sounds very smooth too.
I bet he did. And I did want to thank another author that's been on the show, Alex Grass sent me, I got an Amazon package. I'm like, wait a second, I didn't order anything. And he sent me his book that's getting lost in the catacombs here. But it's his new book is A Boy's Hammer. And he sent it to me with a nice note. He loved the show. And he said, I was telling someone what you said to me during the show. Has that ever happened to you? And I said, no, your brother's never peed in my legs. So he thought of me and he sent me his new book, A Boy's Hammer. When you're ordering Danielle's books, you can order that too. So anyway, do you ever think that maybe a fairy set all this up?
I actually, it's so funny you say that. There are times, yes, I do. I mean, because it's just so improbable when all right. of this, the way it all came together, that I can't help but think there's just some kind of, whether you call it divine, supernatural, I don't know, some kind of intervention, because it's the place I applied to, the resume was lost for a year, and then it slid behind their fax or something, and they found it literally a year later, the day, 2 days later. The way we figured it out was that's when the patient called for his consult. His consultation with the doctor was the same day I was training.
Wow.
It just, the way it all lines up is so otherworldly. Mm-hmm. And he was my first needle stick, literally like my first IV stick was him. So it just, I can't even explain it. And when I was 18 nannying, I was nannying right down the street from his lake house that his family would go to every summer.
Well, I mean, your life has been full of coincidences. Before we start talking about the novels and the world that you have created, I did want you to tell Nicole the Anne Frank story.
Oh my gosh, you heard that? Yeah,
I love that story. I'm sure you don't. I can tell by your reaction you don't like telling it, but it's an amazing story.
I just never know the backlash. When I was in seventh grade, one of my assignments was to rewrite the ending to a classic. Any classic. So let's preface it by saying any classic.
They didn't say fiction classic. They said classic.
Classic. I chose The Diary of Anne Frank.
Wow.
I thought this was genius. I was in seventh grade. So I just thought, oh, it's a really sad ending. I'm going to rewrite it. Once again, I'm in seventh grade, people, so don't everybody like hate. I also thought my ending was genius. I had it that a young Nazi soldier fell in love with her, snuck her out, blah, blah, blah. She's reunited with her father working in a diner in New York. That was my ending in a nutshell.
I like that ending. And, you know, we all wanted a happy ending for Anne Frank. Unfortunately, it didn't happen, but everybody wanted a happy ending for her. It was amazing.
Right.
You know?
And I'm a kid, and I was reading, like, Sweet Valley High and stuff at that time. So, you know, what I did not know at the time was, one, my English teacher was Jewish. so, yeah, that didn't go over well. The real crazy thing was I wound up marrying her nephew. So, fast forward, 20 years later, not even, I am sitting at my at Christmas Eve dinner, and I invite his aunt. His aunt walks in, and it is my seventh grade English teacher. And there she is, sitting at the table, and there is my mother. And at the same time, they both go, Diary of Anne Frank, and point at each other, because to this day, she is still holding it over my head that I rewrote The Diary of Anne Frank's ending. So to find out now that I've become a novelist, I don't even think her son has told her. My husband is not even, like, I think his cousin hasn't even told his mother that I am now a novelist, even though his cousin worked on my book trailer and did the music for it and played the piano. So yes, it was a weird coincidence. The weirdest part is that when I was probably about 4 years old, I remember watching Romper Room and watching my husband on Romper Room, because the one Romper Room episode I remember was they were talking about when you could plant a tree. And I remember sitting there and like hearing a kid go birthday, Christmas. And then I remember this one kid with the biggest head I'd ever seen on a child and blonde hair go bar mitzvah, and looking at my mother and going, what's a bar mitzvah? And my mother going, don't worry about it. And that was my future husband.
So, well, but, yes. But the teacher, your aunt mm-hmm. in law, had a very extreme reaction to you changing the diary, the landing of the diary.
She called my mother in. I got a zero on it. She wanted, like, she called my mother up and was like, I literally, like, disgraced it. My mother was like, well, you didn't say what club. Like, it was sacrilegious what I did. She wanted me, I had to redo it. So I could then, I chose to draw a cover of a book. And it was like, I made a stick figure of like a Nancy Drew book or something. I did something like really just, okay, here you go. But they pulled it. I got in a lot of trouble. They wound up having a yelling match, which is why the two of them remembered each other Christmas Eve.
Right.
Years later, and both pointed at each other and yelled, Diary Van Frank. So yeah, it wasn't, was it because my proudest moment?
I think it's a good ending. I guess the only problem I could see somebody having with it is that she would fall in love with a German soldier. But
there was a lot wrong with it. Apparently, according to her, it was just that I touched history. Little did I know I was technically a pioneer of alternative history. That's how I'd like to look at it now.
Right.
I was a pioneer of alternative history. Really, that's a better way to look at it. I was doing that before the historian. It was me.
Yeah, before any of these people. It was you.
It was me.
It was you.
Yeah. It's still held over my head to this day on his family. They don't like that. But once again, I was a kid. I think that was pretty smart.
I think it was too. I mean, it's as I said, she didn't say fiction book. She said a classic.
No, classic. And I think it was pretty good that I put it in the classic category.
Right.
I don't think I'm getting enough credit on that. But
I'm giving you all sorts of credit.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, I got in a lot of trouble. I was in seventh grade. I mean,
right. Well, you're getting in trouble now. You're getting in trouble now because the birth of the Fae has been protested. Because first of all, I think this is a clever, very clever premise, don't you, Nicole? That and first of all, I had to look up what Fae was. I didn't know Fae, like there was a whole like fairies or Fae's. I didn't know that, but Fae stands for something else though.
Fae in my book stands for the Fellowship Aegis of Earth. So I've taken it and made it an acronym because they call themselves Fae, but it doesn't necessarily mean fairies with wings and little, you know, what we think of as Tinkerbell per se.
Mm-hmm.
They're just using it as we are protectors and we're here to protect the flora, fauna, you know, kind of thing of Earth. So it's a little bit different. But the premise that they were angels sent here to take care of Earth and prep it for their creator, who, yes, okay, you know, Christianity, the whole thing, God. And then the other, the dark fae, are part of the archangels' foot soldiers, are left here and locked out. You know, we have two sides. Did I think I would get myself on blasphemy lists for this?
Well, from what I understand, too,
there's more that went on, but you know,
I think it's very clever, don't you, Nicole?
It's interesting. I mean, I don't know. My book series is called Some Fucked Up Shit, so I'm changing the title to even be allowed in schools.
Right, but right, also I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, write what you want to write. Like, there's an audience for it, and you just got to ignore the haters.
Well, part of what you write, too, is that a fairy part of the Red Sea.
Yes. The parting of the Red Sea did not happen because of Moses. He happened upon it. But the parting of the Red Sea is done by Queen Aurora. She causes a waterspout because there's a fae battle going on. And when Moses comes upon it, there's two separate events going on, and it's more of a convergence of a coincidence and all these things happening. So when he hits his staff down and prays to the Lord, Aurora is creating the water spout. So it's, there's two things going on. It's just, as she says, did I just do your dirty work? And she looks up at the sky and says, you know, what exactly is happening here? The humans just think their prayers have been answered. So they interpret the event that way. It's two different things, but no, a lot of people did not like that. It was funny, you know, some people took offense to that. That chapter they were not happy with. The empathy for the devil, where two of my dark fae are talking and saying, you know, is the devil, is Lucifer wrong because he took his horde back and did not lock them out? Or is the father, who we put our lives on the line for and locked us out, is he wrong? And they kind of have this moral debate, like, is Lucifer as bad as we hear, but he took his demons back and he's protected them? Or is the creator wrong, who threw our asses out and we haven't heard hide nor hair from him? Is he bad? And they're having this debate, and some people really hated that chapter. We're like, you're glorifying Lucifer, you're as bad as that show Lucifer. And I'm like, whoa. First of all, you know, you want to compare me to Neil Gaiman and all this other, okay, like, I'm down for it, because they were, you know, talking about some other shows and things that had been on, and I'm like, okay. And it just got blown out of proportion. So I'm on two blasphemy lists. There could be a third coming. And I'm hoping for it. I mean, you know, let's go three strikes. And I know that there is a group that has petitioned the Vatican to remove the first book. And they're not happy. So at this point, I kind of joked.
The Vatican's not happy, or the people that?
The people aren't happy. I'm hoping the Vatican has better things to do. And if they don't, we have a bigger problem. But so I've joked and said, you've poked the bear now. So let's see what happens. The rest of the series, while we're still in the veil, because, you know, I have other things planned. I've then taken the Our Father and its kingdom come, a fae is done, forgive us. So I've taken the last half of the Our Father and turned it into the titles for the books, just because why not now? So, you know, I get DM'd quite often on Instagram with people telling me, you know, you're angry at God, give me your home address so I can send you books and pamphlets to help with your anger. And into which my reply is, Lucifer has not told me which realm of hell we're going to live at once we're married, but as soon as he does, I will let you know and forward you that address.
That's I want religious fundamentalists to know my address. That's a good
yeah
plan.
Yeah, because I'm really going to give you my home address. I mean,
right,
let's go, people, like, come on now. But I've had some hate mail come my way, so you know, I'm sure Jesus is sitting there golf clapping you for sending me this vitriol. But
I am shocked and thankful that no one religious has found me yet. I don't know how I'd handle that. It'd be really uncomfortable. I'd probably just block them. Like, you're nicer than me for engaging them. I just usually, if I don't like the way someone talks to me, I just immediately block them.
You know what? I was at first, but then I was kind of like, it's gotten to the point where at first it really bothered me. It bothered me a lot. And it bothers me, especially on Bookstagram tours, when I have people sign up with the, you know, the host will tell me, or the tour guide will say, oh, these people have signed up. And the minute I go to their profile and see, like, you know, John 3:16, I'm like, let me explain what's going on here. You know, I'm like, this is not going to go as you think it's going to go. I'm like, they're going to back out, or they think it's a Christian message. They're going to be real mad at me when they find out it's not. So I've tried to, like, tell the host, or the tour guides, look, this is what's happening. It bothered me a lot at first. I've kind of learned to shrug some of it off, because what am I going to do? I mean, I'm not putting religion
when
down.
You say tour guide, what tour are you talking about?
When we do Bookstagram tours, there's one person that kind of organizes it. So I always have to tell that tour guide and warn them a little bit now.
And
give them
it.
A heads up, you know, okay. But now, I mean, if they're mad now, wait till book four comes out, Kingdom Come, because boy, do I have some religious stuff in that one that's going to send everybody's hat on fire. So, you know, like I said, they wanted to poke the bear. Well, now it's awake.
Well, I have a message for all these people that are protesting your books and going to the Vatican. Every religious fundamentalist that's listening to the show, Yes, I'm talking to you, one person. It's a fucking fantasy book. It's fiction. It's not real. If you don't like it, don't read it.
That's exactly what I say. But you know what? There's always one person that feels like they have to ride that pony. So I'm like, go ride it. Right. If you, I joke. I'm like, if you really want to pick on me, just understand who you're picking on. Because you don't want to meet me face to face. Yeah,
because you'll kick their ass.
Exactly. I joke now, you know. And I've had some people that are like, I'm going to come to your gym. I'm like, I work out at Ultimate Gym in Charlotte. I'm like, you let... Tell Doug, the owner, that you're coming. Believe me, you don't want to mess with him. You got to get through him to get to me. He's the last person you want to mess with, but I'm right behind him. So you go right ahead. I'll meet you there. There's a full-size ring in there. We'll talk. It'll be fine.
I don't think they want to meet you in the ring.
But they all, you know, it's...
Although I'm sure Bill Clinton would love to see that.
You know what? He can sell tickets. He can be my ticket guy.
There you go.
So we're all good.
Oh, we got a good fight in here. Yeah, I can see it. But now you've been promoting this book in very unusual ways. First off, you're on the cover of every book.
Yes, that was my publisher, funny enough, called The Four Horsemen. How could I not be published by somebody called The Four Horsemen?
But you were published by someone else before.
I was published by Icon first, but they did not specialize in fiction. So when the Four Horsemen met me on a podcast, as soon as the podcast was finished, they were like, you know, this is kind of what we do is fantasy. So I made the jump with them. And the first thing they did was say, they looked at my cosplay and they were like, why aren't you utilizing cosplay more? And I'm like, I really didn't know. I didn't have an answer. And I had already planned out my covers for the next couple books. And they were like, no, we're scrapping that. And at that point they said, we're going to put you on the cover. And I was kind of leery. I'm like, no, I don't want to. First of all, I didn't want to give all the religious freaks now my face and say, here you go. This is the chick you're looking for. But you know, they were like, no, this is what we're doing. So I put myself in their hands and said, okay. And they wanted to put my dragons because they had been drawn already.
Mm-hmm.
And they put the dragons on the cover. Handy Van is my dragon illustrator and they wanted to feature her work. So we made the deal and they were like, yeah, we're putting you on the cover. So we went forward with that. And I'm happy with the way they turned out. My dad didn't even recognize me on the first cover.
You're like the Fabio of the 21st century.
I'm working on it.
Yeah.
Why not? Somebody's got to be the new Fabio. Why not make it a woman?
There you go. I'm all for that. Also on YouTube, there's a 6 minute plus coming attraction for the book, which I've never seen. I'm sure they're on there, but I read mostly nonfiction, so I don't read a lot of fantasy, and I definitely am not on YouTube saying book previews. But I did enjoy the preview of the and you played
Aurora because I was the only one who fit in the costume, and we had to save money, and we did it in the middle of COVID, or else I would not have been Aurora. Trust me. I wanted an actress, but at the time it was in the middle of COVID when we filmed that. And we just had to, it was quick. It was like, literally we filmed it in a weekend and I was really the only one to fit into the costume. So they were just like, guess what? You're going to be Aurora. This way we don't have to worry about hair. You already have it. So guess who's going to be Aurora? Get in there. A friend of mine played Jarvok because he was the right height. And then another friend of mine did the music. He sang. And then my husband's cousin, the English teacher's son, played piano.
Right.
So it was a family affair. And we threw that together in an empty shop. It was like one of those things where it was just, we wanted to do something different to kind of catch people's attention and kind of imagine what this world might look like and, you know, kind of go from there. So that's, it was a lot of fun.
A lot of green screen, a lot of special effects. And it's pretty interesting.
It was intense. It was, you know, we had planned all this other stuff, but once COVID hit, everything got, it was all of a sudden, and the time, everything had already been carved out. So we already had people and it was like, oh, what do we do now? And then they were like, okay, well, you can only have 10 people. You can only do this. And then it was like, mm-hmm. do we scrap the whole thing or do we just go forward? So we decided, you know what, let's just go forward and do what we can do with it. So I was like, you know what, I'm just going to do it and see what happens. I mean, yeah, I could have just done some Shutterstock stuff and, you know, thrown it together, but I thought I'm just going to kind of make it my own. And so we did.
Yeah. But on the other hand, the COVID, people were sitting in their homes with nothing else to do but read books. So that was kind of good for you.
Yeah. So that's why I just kind of went out there. It's funny. People were home reading books, but they were also kind of like sticking to the books they knew.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a weird time for publishing because as much as people were like, oh, I'm home, I've got nothing to do, they were going back and rereading Harry Potter. They weren't really taking chances on new authors. So that's also why I kind of did it, hoping that it would get them to say, oh, what's this? And try to get some attention. So we got some attention, but like I said, it also got the attention of the Four Horsemen. And they put me on their podcast and they were the ones to say, hey, you know, let's talk. And it was a great move because it's propelled me forward.
Right. Now, we've talked about your detractors. You have to have, you know, having published 3 books now, a loyal Fae fan base.
I've got my fanatics, my Fae friends. And
are they fanatics?
They are. Yes, we call them fanatics. We call them Fae friends. They all kind of, they've taken on their own little identities. I've had some wonderful, wonderful people that I've met through this that have been so supportive, especially when the detractors do come out. These guys come out and they do support me, and they tell me their feelings, which I appreciate tremendously. And then I've had some amazing stories. I've had, you know, people who have questioned, you know, what are the Fae sexuality wise? And when I've explained that the Fae are fluid, they don't see gender, they just see energy. I had somebody on Instagram DM me and ask me that question. They were like, you know, what are your Fae? When I said, they just see energy. They don't fall in love with the package. They fall in love with the energy. She said,
no pun intended.
Oh. No, yeah, no pun intended. She said, can I use that? And I said, what do you mean? And she goes, I'm going to come out to my family tonight. And she goes, well, I just came out to you for the first time. You're the first person I've come out to. Can I tell my family that? And I was like, and I'm like, of course. And she's like, I'm going to tell them I fall in love with energy. I don't see gender. Is that okay? And I'm like, you can say whatever you want, girl. And she's like, I'm going to come out. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, and I'm going to kind of use your Fae to do it. And I'm like, do whatever you want to do. That's awesome. But I've had like experiences like that. And amazing. That's all my Fae fans. So I can't, if that's what the only things I've done, I'm happy. I've touched somebody and that's pretty cool.
That's a great story. And I hope that went well. I hope everybody, you know, accepts whatever, if you're a Fae or whatever. And that's great. Now, I can't believe it's been an hour, but I mean, we could talk to you forever. But
thank you. I appreciate that.
I don't know what it is about 2022. These shows have been great all year. We have had so many great people, but including you. But I've got a couple questions, a couple more questions. First off, do you ever find yourself you know, Nicole was saying, sometimes she gets in a haze and, you know, as she's walking around, she has the stories. Do you ever find yourself weaving between real life and the land of the Fae?
All the time. Look how I'm dressed. Yes, I'm always, the Fae are always in my head. Constantly. I'm always looking for the next story because I'm usually writing multiple stories at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So their voices are there. My dragons, Los the dragon, is inspired by my Yorkie Carlos. So I'm always watching him, looking for inspiration for Los. So I'm always in the Vale.
Now, what has your Yorkie done that has translated to a dragon?
The way we came up with Los the chameleon dragon was because it was bath time for Carlos, and Carlos hates bath time, hates it, like despises it.
Right.
So the minute you say bath time, he's gone. And it was bath time. He knew it because I took his collar off. He ran out of the room. So I was looking for him and I'm like, where did the, and I first I thought he got out of the house. I didn't notice that his toy bucket was tipped over sideways. And I'm looking for like 10 minutes. I can't find this dog. And meanwhile, my other Chiweenie Penelope's like staring at the toy bucket like, you idiots. I look, he actually buried himself in and pulled an ET. And he's staring straight ahead, blended in with other toys that are his collar, staring just straight ahead, not blinking, nothing, perfectly Ooh. Blended in. And I'm like, and she's looking at us like, dude, do you not see him? And we walked past him, couldn't find him. And finally I bent down because he blinked and I'm like, mother effer, the little brat is right there. And so I'm looking, I'm like, Carlos, look at me. And he kept staring straight ahead, would not look at me. I'm like, you little. And that's when I was like, you're a chameleon dragon. You're a chameleon friggin'. You're not a fire breather. You're not an acid breather. You're not an ice breather. You're a chameleon dragon. This little thing straight ahead, toys around him, pulling an ET, blending in. And I'm like, he's a chameleon dragon. That's what he is. Like at that point, the inspiration just hit and I knew exactly what he was. And when he wants to get lost, he has this one big, it looks like a pound puppy, but it matches his coloring. He'll go and sit on it and curl himself up and he blends in perfectly. And you can walk right by him. And every time I'm like, where's Los? He's on top of the freaking pound puppy.
Wow.
So that's where the chameleon dragon came from.
And that's, go ahead.
I was going to ask if you had a favorite character, if all your characters are based on like reality, is there still one that stands out the most to you?
Los is one of my favorites because it's Carlos. But I don't know if I necessarily have a favorite. They kind of all waver based on what I'm writing and what's going on. Hoggle, the metal gnome, is my father. So he's based on my dad. Marco is based on my uncle because they're the only two who can work in the body shop together and not kill each other. So everybody is somebody I know. Serena is Jen. Desdemona can be a little bit of me at times. She's captain of the Royal Guards.
Is an Aurora part of you as well?
Aurora is part of me as well. She's what I'd like to be sometimes, but she's got my naivete, definitely. Jarbok is probably every brooding guy I was not supposed to go after that I did. You know, the bad boy that we're supposed to learn about. Zion's a little like that too. But they're all a little bit of me at times. And people, like I said, people I've known, I've had interactions with. So they kind of waver on who my favorite is. You know, Priya and Yagora are the mean girls that have always bullied me in different iterations. They're in there. Lady Penelope is my other dog, my other Chiweenie Penelope. You meet her a little bit later on. So everybody's there when you get to book 7 and 8, which is takes place in the Lyme clinic. The doctor is the doctor I work for. Half the crap that went on in that Lyme clinic, I put right in that book. Like I couldn't make that crap up if I tried.
So it's
all there.
Is the series going to go on to the present day? Is that what's going on?
Yes, it goes right on. It comes right up to the 21st century. It comes right up to present day. My patient is in there. He is, his literary persona is Agent Graham. And the stuff like how he got it, recruited into the CIA, that's all in there. But some of the stuff that went in that Lyme clinic, like actually went on, that's all true. Like at one point, Nurse Morgan says to Graham, or his disguise as Clark. That's that's a comic book Easter egg. I have a lot of comic book references in that book. She's like, he's like, if the doctor asks me one more time if I need a prostate exam, he's like, that'll be the fifth time this week. That's all true. The doctor had a huge crush on my patient and would always ask if he needed a prostate exam. And I'd have to go in and rescue him. He would text me and be like, don't I need an EKG today? And I'd have to go in and be like, you asked if he needs EKG today. And she'd be like, oh, is that on? I'm like, and I would like open up the chart and go, oh, it's right here. And close to get her out.
It's one thing to have a crush on somebody. It's another thing to ask him 5 times a day if he can stick a finger up their ass. But do you have a favorite realm?
The Vale. I love the Vale. Because that's purely my creation. you know, as the world architect of the Vale and making the map and doing all that. I love spending time in the Vale. I'd probably say that, the Vale.
Okay. Well, I think that gives everybody a taste of what your books are. And if you're into adult fantasy, and it is adult, and from what I understand, even though these are gender neutral fairies, there's a sex scene coming.
There is a discussion of aura, the Fae aura blend. They don't have sex per se, but sex. But yes, we do have in book three, From the Ashes, there's a big discussion because we find out King Jorvok has never had, he's never aura blended with anybody.
Right.
So he doesn't know the mechanics, and Zion, his second in command, has to explain to him what this is all about. And I did not use any sexual terms. I only used self-defense terms and battle terms.
Well, so that seems oddly appropriate.
It was. It took me a long time to write it, though. Believe it or not, that took me forever to write. So he has to explain to Jorvok, realizing that this Fae does not understand it. How would he get it? So as a battle warrior, as a warrior, the best way to describe it would be using it. So one of the terms he says is, he's like, first, before you unsheathe your sword, make sure it is of the right hardened steel. So he says things like that to kind of make sure. My first major sex scene is later on in book 7 and 8. That was a real sex scene between two humans. And that took me a long time to write. Like, it was a good month of me like sitting at the computer going, okay, here I go. I'm going to write a sex scene. Here it is. And I would sit and go, okay, I'm going to write it right now. And nothing would happen. And I finally like called my patient up and was like, I got to write a sex scene with your character. I don't know how to do this. And he had to like, I went back and forth, but I finally got it out.
No, well, that sounds like it would make treatment really go by real quick. It sounds like it'd be a fun time listening to that. But
that was interesting.
I'm sure. Danielle, this has been a delight, hasn't it, Nicole?
Oh yeah. So much fun.
Yeah, I can't wait enter the realm of the Fae. And Danielle, if you could tell everybody the titles of your books, where they can find your books, where they can find you, where they can find your website, and get cool screenshots like this.
No problem. The books are part of the Birth of the Fae series. First book is Locked Out of Heaven. The second book is Thine Eyes of Mercy. The third book is From the Ashes. And the fourth book, Kingdom Come, will be coming out on May 30th. You can find them all at Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com, wherever fine books are sold online. And then you can find me on birthofthefae.com or on Instagram at birthofthefae_novel, or check out fourhorsemanpublications.com for any information on the Fae, and check it out there.
And last question, and we were discussing this the other night with Nicole and I, how much do you miss bookstores?
I wish I could go back to bookstores. I would love to do signings again and meet people face to face and go to crystal shops and things like that. I'm sold in a lot of crystal shops and I can't go back to any of it. And I'm hoping that'll all open up soon.
But I mean, you know, as far as Borders and all these other bookstores, I used to
love Borders. That was like, for me, once again, I'm going to sound like a geek. Friday nights was Borders. That was what I did on a Friday night, was go to Borders. And I miss Borders. I miss all of it. Even Barnes and Nobles, like, I can't even go any of those places. I was just so happy I found a comic book store down here, for God's sake. But I miss all of those. I miss that feel of opening up a book and going to a bookstore and just browsing and looking. It's just, I wish all of that would come back. And even just going to the cons.
Yeah.
And seeing
the kids
everything.
Don't know these days. The cons are coming back, but the kids don't know what it's like to go to bookstores.
Yeah, a bookstore, Borders, I actually miss, and even the smaller mom and pop stores. It's great to go online because you can see everything, but sometimes it's so overwhelming than just browsing a bookshelf and seeing what's there and being able to pick it up and hold it and kind of look at it. Because sometimes you do get drawn in just by opening it up and seeing, you know, all the little details in a book.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really, you know, that's special. I know even in my books, you know, I try to put illustrations in the first couple pages just to kind of give you a sense of the world. And you don't, it's hard to get that online.
Right. Well, I thank you for letting us into your magical world, Danielle. This has been wonderful. Go to birthofthefae.com and just dive in. If it can make an IV treatment tolerable, just think how it will affect your life.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, guys.
And Nicole, how do people get a hold of you and read your books?
I am Nicole Six Books on Instagram, and I am Nicole H Six on Facebook. And you can just go to Amazon or Barnes and Noble and look for Nicole Six, spelled like Motley Crue, Nikki Six, and S-I-X-X, and my books will come up.
And I'm Goth Comedian on all social media. Had such a wonderful time tonight. Everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.